important is it for us to access our emotions when it comes to healing on the physical side of things?
It's very important. You know, every person's different. Some people are sick because and only because they suppress their emotion. Whereas other people are sick because they're believing things that are so not true about themselves, and their life has gotten into such a big kerfuffle and chaos, and they're absolutely overwhelmed and stressed and unhappy because of the choices they're making.
Anything is possible, both on the bad side, but also on the good side. So let's focus on what's possible on the good side. Do you know how important it is for you to be able to achieve that mind-body connection in terms of your overall health? But have you ever thought about how that works when it comes to psychology and your ability to work through those challenges that you might have from an emotional perspective? I recently had the opportunity to read a wonderful book called Holistic Counseling, and it's introducing the VIS dialogue. And actually what it is, it talks about the breakthrough of healing method uniting the worlds of the mind, body, medicine, and psychology. Now, I know that sounds like a bunch of mumbo-jumbo, but after reading the book, it just left me with more questions about what it was that I can do and what it is that you should be looking for when it comes to your healing of your body, the kinds of things that we should be looking at from an integrative perspective so that we can be totally healed. You know, it's been my experience, because you know, you all know my history. I have an anxiety disorder, and I've done fairly well with that. But just recently, I had a relapse, just recently. And I should have recognized what was going on, because I wasn't feeling well with my body either. Once I realized what was going on with my body and all the other different techniques I use to deal with my anxiety when it rises, and it's been a long time since I've had that issue, I was able to really press through. And now I'm feeling much better. And a lot of it has to do with some of the key things I picked up in this wonderful book, Holistic Counseling. And today we have the author with us, Moshe Daniel Block. He is a naturopath. He is also a counselor. He also is a homeopathic master clinician and the founder and author of Holistic Counseling. And I'm so excited to have him here today. Thank you for being with us today on What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy.
Thanks, Linus. It's a pleasure to be here. I love discussing this. And I love your passion. I love that you're reaching out to people to help bring in important messages for their own well-being. You know, we're all in this together, so it's a really wonderful concerted effort.
Yes, it is a wonderful concerted effort, and I love the idea of you saying that we're all in this together. I think sometimes people have a tendency to feel isolated. One of my challenges with anxiety when I was in the throes of it just a week and a half ago is the feeling of isolation and not being able to reach out to let people know, hey, I'm sorry that I'm coming off weird, but I'm going through this problem. And I think a lot of times what happens, the first step, I guess, in trying to get well and healing our mind and our body is recognizing that there's an issue or a problem. And I think sometimes we have difficulty just admitting to ourselves that we have an issue or a problem. Why do you think that is?
I think because the world, you know, I could speak for our culture, you know, North American culture. Mm-hmm. We have a strong need to appear successful, to appear as if we have everything together. When anybody has any kind of issue with themselves, whether it's a physical anomaly that's visible or if they have anxiety like you were talking about, or they don't have everything quote unquote together, there's judgment there. Our society is very judgmental and hypocritical. Mm-hmm. Because everybody has problems, you know. Mm-hmm. The president of the United States has issues. Mm-hmm. Mentally, emotionally, nobody's perfect. Right. Even counselors, psychologists, naturopathic doctors, and healers are wounded. We're all wounded. And so I think it'd be really nice if we all just gave each other the grace to go through the tough stuff that we have to face in order to grow, rather than making it a big hush-hush or a big something to be ashamed of.
You know, that's very key what you said about grace. because I don't think that we give each other a lot of grace in this society. We set the bar so high for ourselves and others that it's almost impossible to reach that level of success because we're not perfect. In fact, I wish there was a way we could get rid of, just throw out that word perfect and perfection, because there really is no such thing. There's always something that's a little bit off. And that's what I really like about your whole concept of holistic counseling, the idea of healing all those things that might be a little bit off. It's not just your mind. It's not just your body. It's not just your spirit. It's a continuum of things that can feed into why we may not be feeling good in our bodies. Explain to us, in layman's terms, what is holistic counseling and why are you so passionate about it?
Yes, for sure. You know, I just like to address what you said about perfection. I'll come back to the holistic counseling. You know, it's kind of a little story about how I got into it in the first place. So 20 years ago, I had a very severe autoimmune disease called myasthenia gravis. And it's an autoimmune disease where the immune cells attack the neuromuscular junction, basically the ends of the nerves, and then where it feeds the muscles. And I had paralysis and I was very sick. And I did a dialogue at the Options Institute. That's Barry Neil Kaufman's and Samaria Kaufman's organization in the Catskills. I think it's in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And I did a dialogue and a woman brought me down through a series of questions to this bottom line question. And it was, what makes you think you need to be perfect? Because I had said something like, well, I need to be perfect. And she said, well, what makes you think you need to be perfect? So it isolated this belief system that I had never even thought about, hadn't even considered it. And because I hadn't considered it, I hadn't even considered it a choice, that I was empowered to actually change my mind about it, that I could do something about this problematic issue. Because believing that I needed to be perfect, I judged myself harshly in the model of perfection, which is a false model, like you mentioned. And then I would be very harsh with myself and beat myself up emotionally, which led to the autoimmune disease, because autoimmune is the immune system attacking itself. And what I've discovered and what I teach in holistic counseling is that the mind and the body are one. So the body is a reflection of the inner workings of the person's mind. So what I was doing was attacking myself for not being perfect. So my body was like, all right, we're in the attacking self business. Well, how are we going to do that? Well, the immune cells turn against the aspects of the body. And in my case, it was the neuromuscular junction, the acetylcholine receptors in myasthenia gravis. But for Hashimoto's thyroiditis, it's the thyroid cells. For rheumatoid arthritis, it's the joints, et cetera, et cetera. So I had a spontaneous healing when I made the choice on the spot that I don't need to be perfect. So that was 20 years ago, and it was right when I began to study being a naturopathic doctor. I studied 4 years, intense, very medical, and also some, you know, of the core teachings of naturopathy, which includes counseling. But it wasn't a very not the best program for counseling, let's say. So I took what I learned from this process that helped me heal, a process of asking simple questions to get a person to go deeper and deeper into their subconscious mind and the tickings and the workings of their mind to reveal the underlying belief system that is problematic and that is at the root of their suffering, whether it be emotional suffering or mental suffering, anxiety, depression, insomnia, or it's physical disease, autoimmune disease, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, cancer. I mean, you name it. This is the process to uncover and help the person recognize the belief and how to release it. So that's holistic counseling, the process. The book is also filled with the philosophy around holism. So I just shared a little bit about that. That is, mind and body are one, and the body is a faithful puppy dog that is reflecting the body, the mind. And then different aspects of holism, different principles in practice for the practitioner, and also for the person going through the holistic model, the ins and outs and the challenges that we face in our society, because our society is pretty dominated by the allopathic model.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which, if somebody is not aware of it, it's the model that involves, you know, giving something, a drug or a supplement for a condition, and does not involve any exploration or understanding of the underlying cause or the individuality of that, of the disease.
You know, it's interesting because there's so much here that you've said, but there's something in particular that you said that I thought was very interesting, that initially beginning this process starts with questions. And I think that that sounds so simplistic, but it really isn't very simple, because very rarely do we ask ourselves some of these questions. And in your book, there's a particular area where you talk about some of the concise questions that you want to begin to ask yourself to begin to get to the root of what might be causing some of the issues. So in the case of someone, let's say, who has hyperthyroidism, or someone who has fibromyalgia, or perhaps high blood pressure, your method, how would your method help them to discover what the root cause was from a psychological perspective?
A great question, Linus. Now, just to address a little thing you said to ask yourself, the questions that we need to ask ourselves. So It's tough to read the book and then to jump in and ask yourself. You can do it. And I have had feedback from people who have had conditions for many, many years with no success despite trying many things, and just from reading the book they were able to heal themselves, and I encourage people to try that. However, it's very helpful to have an expert helping you with the questions, because when I do a training in holistic counseling where the people learn what it's like to receive the questions, and then they learn how to do the questions as practitioners to help others. So then you have the experience of what it's like to ask the questions and stuff like that. And, you know, sort of jumping into it with yourself, it's a little bit more difficult. But I'm not going to say it's impossible, because it just depends on how a person grasps what the questions are about. Now, to address your question, so let's take one of those conditions. Anyone in particular that you'd like to
yes.
address?
Well, as I've shared, I just recently went through what I call a relapse when it comes to my anxiety disorder. And one of the questions that I asked myself, and I've read the book, and so I was trying to piecemeal some of the parts of the book to help me get through the process of getting to the reality of what really was going on with me. So
yes.
One of the things and I asked myself was, what does feeling devastated feel like?
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay.
Yeah. And the reason why I chose that question was because you would think, well, devastation feels like devastation. But I said, well, let me dig deeper. Maybe there's something here, because why am I feeling so anxious? Maybe there is something that I'm devastated about. And I have to tell you, doctor, there was something that I was devastated about. It had to do with one of my daughters and something that they were going through. And I had buried that so deep so that I could deal with that issue and everything else. And of course, what ended up happening when your emotional closet gets so full, eventually it exacerbates into a physical symptom, or in my case, an emotional one. But I had buried that so deep that I had not even looked at what she was going through as something that was devastating me. But
now I don't know if you recall, but I say my experience with anxiety is interesting. Mm-hmm. Anxiety is a sign that a person is not dealing with something underlying. So anxiety in and of itself is not something, but a sign of not dealing with something.
Absolutely.
So it could be sadness. You know, a person, whatever bothers them and they don't want to look at, it will manifest as an anxious feeling. And so it could be anger. It could be sexual desire. Whatever we judge that we can't handle, or we don't want to handle, or we can't deal with, if we are experiencing it and we say no, you have a healthy part of our being, it'll manifest as anxiety. So that's really good that you uncovered that here is something that's going on underneath the surface. So so let's say a person has anxiety. Now, I could offer you to do a miniature demonstration with people, but this is a very personal, so I would never want to put you on that spot unless you felt absolutely comfortable. It is a big deal. You never know what you're going to get to, so we could talk more around what I would do with someone.
Absolutely, let's do it.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Make it a daily stop and also get the app. You can go right to the App Store and download our free app, and that will put all our content right into your hands on your phones and your tablets. It doesn't get any easier than that.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about the anxiety. How does that feel for you?
Well, sometimes it's difficult for me to breathe. I don't really have panic attacks, but I have shortness of breath. I feel that, like, this queasy feeling, like I'm not like I want to throw up, but just kind of queasy. I also begin to pick at my fingers, you know.
Okay.
And it's difficult for me to focus on anything. I can start something, but I won't finish it. And for someone who's an entrepreneur, that's suicide. You cannot
yes.
live like that.
It's counterproductive.
Right. And before I had found the tools to help me with this, which was over 7 years ago, I had found a way to still be productive. But it cost me in other ways, you know. There were other issues that I had. But I have found a way to be, you know, to still be productive. But because I've learned the correct way to deal with my anxiety, I couldn't even use those ways anymore. So that caused even more frustration. And so I felt like I was just kind of trapped. And then I began to isolate. I didn't want to talk to anyone about it. I didn't want to reach out to anyone, you know.
I just want to interrupt you here for a sec. Let's go a little deeper. So now you're telling a story. This is actually what I do in practice.
Okay.
Well, in order to go deeper, we don't want to branch too much out horizontally. The depth is what occurs is when I ask you a question, it'll bring you deeper into your own self. And so now you've given me some things that I can now ask you about. So you mentioned that there's a fidgetiness, that you fidget with your fingers, there's a queasy feeling, you have trouble breathing, and you also have trouble focusing, which is very counterproductive for your business and for what you do. Now, of those things that you mentioned, which of them is stands out, or which bothers you the most? What has the most energetic impact on you?
The inability to focus.
Okay, the inability to focus. So how, tell me a little bit more about that. So you feel anxious. What is it that is stopping you from focusing?
You know, the feeling of being anxious, kind of dizzy feeling, the spending time pushing back what I don't want to think about that I think might be causing me anxiety. The energy I'm spending on that keeps me from focusing as well.
Okay, so it's actually the energy that you're spending pushing back things that you don't want to focus on, which you're being preoccupied by, which is keeping you from being able to focus. So what is it that you are spending time trying not to focus on?
I'm trying not to think about the trouble that my daughter was having. I'm trying not to think about all the work that I have yet to do and trying to piecemeal it and not think about it as a whole. And I'm trying not to think about how unhappy I am with myself, that I'm not handling this better.
Okay, so there's some things that you're trying not to do, you're trying not to think about, and then there's also you feeling unhappy with yourself that you're not succeeding so much at accomplishing these things you're trying not to do. Okay, so now, which of those has more weight, has more impact?
I think the one that has more weight is being unhappy with myself, that I'm not able to push through that feeling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so what do you do when you're not happy with yourself?
I isolate, but also I go through, I call it Linus's cavalcades of failures. I go through everything that I can think of, going all the way back past probably elementary school, that didn't work out for me, that I did wrong, mostly that I did wrong. I beat up on myself about, you know, I'm not good enough, I didn't do a good job there, I could have done better. I start focusing on that when I start feeling like that.
Right, okay. And what makes you do that?
I think it's a form of admonishment. I need to, like, punish myself or something because I'm not performing at optimum.
Uh-huh. And what makes you feel like you need to admonish yourself for not performing at optimum?
Because I think that's because that's a bad thing, and so therefore there should be consequences.
So the idea is that it's bad for me not to be focusing on what I need to do, and therefore there should be consequences, which is I should admonish myself.
Right. Okay.
And where does that come from, this idea that, you know, that I should admonish myself for doing something bad, let's say?
You know, I hate to be one of those people, and when I was in therapy for all this years ago, you know, I said I hate to be one of those people to beat up on my parents. But I have to say that I had great parents. I had a great childhood. But I had a mother who was very exacting, and she appeared to me in my eyes all the way until her death when she was 56 to be perfect. There wasn't anything my mother couldn't do in my way of thinking. She was a taskmaster. She was goal-oriented. She was a Renaissance woman. She really was an amazing person. You get it.
I get the idea. So she's a taskmaster.
Yeah.
She taught you that you have to drive yourself, and it sounds like that's where this idea came from, that when you're not doing something, you're not doing enough, or you're doing something which you call bad, then you have to admonish yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that true?
I don't think it's true, and I also don't think it's healthy. I think it's one of the lies that I tell myself when I'm in the throes of anxiety. And I want the listeners to know that even though for 7 years I was doing fine with my anxiety and managing it well, I think what happened was that I wasn't introducing anything new in terms of keeping myself well as circumstances began to change. And I was using some of the same methods that worked then that weren't working now. And that's why I want my listeners to know that it's okay. If you have had issues before, whether it's with your health or physical health or with your emotional health, and then something happens and you have a relapse, it's okay to let people know that you need help. And for me, I realized that the first step in coming back to where I needed to be was to kind of, you know, rip off the shades and expose myself and say, hey, you know what? I'm not feeling good. You know, and before that, I would never tell anybody how I was feeling, not ever. But one of the things that helped me was that first question I asked myself. Of course, I didn't get a chance to dig as deep as what you're talking about right here. But I began to immediately feel better once I told someone how I was feeling and once I recognized and admitted to myself that I needed help. I think sometimes we have problems admitting to ourselves that we need help.
Well, it sounds like it's part of the package of your being hard on yourself and not trying not to go into the places where you consider are bad, but then you end up being distracted by it anyway because you keep going over and over it again. So the very thing that you don't want to do, you end up doing because you're being so hard on yourself.
Exactly.
So it makes a lot of sense. Now, I think that we could pause here because already we've revealed an underlying pattern. So now what holistic counseling teaches is that first you reveal what some of the beliefs are. Now, this may not be the deepest belief, but let's say this is a deep belief that I have to push myself and I have to admonish myself for not being perfect. So this is definitely a pattern that's clear that the origin is with your mother. So because we know an origin, it makes it easier to recognize that it's not carved in stone, that you actually learned it externally. You adopted it from your mother. So now the next process is to decide, is this belief true? Is it good? Is it serving you? So I think that you recognize and you even said, well, no, this is not good for me, it's making me sick, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the next thing is the choice itself. Do you want to keep living this way?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so can you change that pattern?
Yes.
Yes, good, good. Now, you know, this is a very, very quick, like, fast track of holistic counseling demonstration. Let's say you said, no, I can't. I would say, well, what's stopping you? Because then we may go even to a deeper place where something, another pocket of issue comes up that I'm going to make up. I'm not like channeling or intuiting your personal problem, but I'll make up based on some other examples of what things come up. So I'll be letting my mother down. So this could be even deeper than the pattern, because it's even deeper that it would be worse for you to let her down than for you to fail at being a taskmaster on yourself. Mm-hmm. So what would that be like, letting her down? Would it be the end of the world? Well, what makes you think that? So basically holistic counseling, and the reason why it's so effective is because it's profoundly listening to the person, what they're struggling with, going deeper and just following what I call down deeper into the rabbit hole and following the stream. The input of the practitioner, of the doctor, is one of a guide. And what I have found with conventional psychotherapy and counseling and psychology is that the practitioner is always giving advice. You know, you hear a little bit about this and then you say, oh, well, this is the problem and you need to do this and this is typical for someone at your age and don't be too hard on yourself. And we hear advice. And what does advice do for you when you're suffering?
Wow. For me, usually when people are giving me advice and I'm going through, you know, the throes of anxiety, it always makes the situation worse, because I'm feeling like they really don't understand what I'm going through. Their advice is never spot on. It makes me feel further isolated and makes me want to withdraw more when I'm going through one of those periods, because their advice is based upon their life experience and maybe their experience with others, whatever, but not necessarily with me. And so,
or a textbook, their
right,
experience
exactly.
with a textbook.
Theoretical, a lot of theory, you know. And
absolutely.
And one of the things that I like to say to people all the time, the women that I coach, is that every person is unique. There is no cookie cutter approach to each and every issue that you may have. You are unique into itself. And that brings me to something, Doctor, that I love about your philosophy. And that has to do with being aligned to our I am. Mm. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that has a lot to do with, this is kind of an overused word, but I think it's appropriate, with our authenticity in terms of who we are. What does that
Absolutely.
Mean? What does that mean to be aligned with our I am? And why is that important to our overall health?
Yes, well, for me, the I am is everything. It's our true nature. It's the emanation of our very nature, our beingness. And in my awareness, there's a hierarchy of energy flow that I establish in the book with the metaphor of the waterfall. So the I am is the soul. And the soul is connected with the universe, with God, with the Great Spirit, with all healing energy. When there is a harmony with I am, then there's no inhibition to receiving from the universe and from being spontaneously and always supplied with healing, vibrant life force. When we start to interfere with the I am, then we start to literally put up roadblocks or blockages, boulders in the flow of the waterfall that nourishes through the mental plane and then into the emotional plane and then into the body. So Chinese medicine has something that's called the three treasures, and that is the mind, the jing, governs the qi, that is the life force, the flow of healing vitality, and then the qi governs the blood, which is the physical blood that congeals and manifests as the body. Mm-hmm. So when there's a block in the mental process, which is against the I am, a belief that literally is like throwing a wrench into the wheels, into the engine of our system, then there is a blockage in the flow of chi, and then the flow of blood is also affected. The nourishment of the cells is inhibited, and then physical pathology will result. Or it could just be stuck in the mental emotional plane where you feel anxiety and depression and your just life force is low. You have low energy, you have chronic fatigue, you can't sleep, you know, stuff like that. So the things that get stuck in the I, that block the I am, begin in the mind. Perceptions of reality about ourselves and about others and relationships and the things that matter. So for instance, a child is on the floor playing, having a fun time. Their parents are going through financial issues. They're all stressed out. What do kids do? They make a lot of noise. So they're, but it's a part of joy is to be loud. So the parents go, shush, stop that. And eventually the child learns that to be expressive is bad. So that's an example of how the I am would be inhibited, is the person says, I'm not okay being joyous and loud. You know, I'm not okay. That's a negative I am statement. So when we believe and when we carry around these negative I am statements, that's when the life force gets blocked and it causes the pathology.
Interesting. The things we tell ourselves. You know, the other thing that I think is very interesting about your holistic counseling, the philosophy behind it, is incorporating the soul in terms of an overall, in terms of taking a look at us being well overall. How does the soul influence what might be happening with us physically and emotionally?
Well, it's a great question. You know, the soul is a very, very high vibrational thing. It's beyond, I want to say it's beyond influence. Where we have influence is in choice, in the mental sphere. So the soul is always kind of like, imagine like a light bulb, you know, it's just chilling out in the very center, in the core of our being, and it's radiating out. So the soul's influence is to be or not to be. So when we are, when we're aligned with our I am statement, then the soul is radiant and is supplying nourishing life force and we're healthy. When it's inhibited, then we develop pathology. So the soul's involvement is either we allow ourselves to be or we don't. So what really matters most is the recognition of the choice that we're making in the mental sphere, because that's where the health is either made by allowing ourselves just to be or unmade by resistance and blockage and false belief systems.
You know, there's something else that you talk about in your book that I think is so important. This is so important. That has to do with dealing with our emotions as we are feeling them and maybe even moving them or moving through the emotions. And there's various techniques that you talk about that some of us do every day or could do every day, and we're just not doing it. But it could go a long way in terms of remaining emotionally healthy and hopefully, you know, physically healthy as well. Could you share some of those techniques with us?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, technique number one is allow yourself to feel everything that you're feeling.
Oh, that is so huge. I have to agree with you on that, because one of the things when I realized that I was, you know, having that relapse in anxiety, I was trying to keep from feeling it. And then when I finally admitted to myself, okay, I'm having some issues here, I leaned into it. I allowed myself to feel the worst that I could feel so that it would take the power away in terms of my being fearful about being anxious or whatever. That is so important. I just have to say from practical experience that that's really the beginning of coming back, or the beginning of healing is doing that.
Absolutely. Yes. So, you know, when just knowing you from the very brief amount of time that we dialogue together, it's clear that somebody who feels they need to be perfect will not give themselves the right to feel anything negative. So there's a judgment there. So part of the necessity is to recognize the judgments that we have around emotion. So, you know, in our culture, it's not uncommon to hear like, oh, pull your socks up, you know, like, oh, no time for sadness, or sadness is weakness, or, you know, anger is to be frowned upon. There's all these stigmas and judgments around it. So we really have to be brutally honest with ourselves about what we believe about our emotion, and then, you know, release and let go of those things which inhibit the natural expression and the natural feeling. So number one, as I said, is allowing yourself to feel, and that could mean being mindful of what you're feeling. Because, so this is interesting. Let's say you take somebody who's completely detached from themselves. In other words, completely out of touch. They don't know what they're feeling, and they don't know what they're thinking. So the first step could be to see, to get in touch with what they're feeling when certain things stir up their emotion. So I just got mad about something. What was that? I just got mad. Okay, so I'm letting myself feel the anger. Now the mental subconscious thoughts of belief systems are subtler than the emotion. So for some people, the emotion is the gateway to the beliefs. Mm-hmm. So I'm feeling really angry. Well, what am I angry about? Okay, I'm just going to let myself feel and sit with that for a bit. And then when you sit with that for a bit, it expands, and then the mental underlying issue that triggered the anger bubbles to the surface. Oh, I'm angry because that guy just disrespected me. So what's the belief there? Well, I need to be respected because otherwise that means that I'm no good or something like that. So the feeling is the gateway to the belief. But it could also be the opposite, is that the feeling is necessary to have a full release of the belief. So if a person is just very mental, but they're not in touch with their emotional field, then they could be aware of the workings of their mind, but they can't clear it because there's these stuck, suppressed, and completely frozen emotion.
When I start thinking about the future too much and thinking about the past too much, then that means I'm not focused on the present. And as long as I'm focused on the present, especially if I'm going through a difficult day where anxiety is nipping at my heels, it helps me to just focus on that moment in time and to not let anxiety begin to, you know, eke in to get me thinking about all of the atrocities of the past or, oh my God, what might happen in the future, but just stay present in this moment in time. There's some other techniques that I thought were really interesting that you talk about in your book when it comes to moving past emotion. I mean, one of the things you talk about is watching a sad tearjerker movie to get the sadness out. And boy, I'm telling you, I know that everybody's done that, right? You're feeling kind of sad anyway, and next thing you know, you're watching a movie and you're crying. But there's something that is really cathartic about that. I just saw a movie the other day. This is at the end. I'm no longer feeling my anxiety, but I still have the leftover residuals of sadness that caused it in the first place. And I found myself, you know, crying during this movie, which is not that unrealistic for me to cry at any movie. But the good thing about this was I felt so much better after I got through crying watching that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so exactly. Linus, you know, I suggest that as a technique for people who have trouble accessing their emotion. Mm. So it's a suggestion for, you know, you're just so used to shutting down the emotion and to swallowing it and saying, I shouldn't do that. That makes me weak or it's bad. So there's such a mental override. But the movie, the film, puts you into a scenario where you could cry about something else. Mm-hmm. And that triggers your own sadness. And then you end up releasing and having catharsis for your own issues. Mm-hmm. That you, if you, you know, address in your own self, sometimes you put that, the judge. Mm-hmm. The judge steps in and says, oh, no, we're not doing that. Mm. So that's just a technique for accessing the emotion. Yeah.
How important is it for us to access our emotions when it comes to healing on the physical side of things?
It's very important. You know, every person's different. Some people are sick because and only because they suppress their emotion. Whereas other people are sick because they're believing things that are so not true about themselves, and their life has gotten into such a big kerfuffle and chaos, and they're absolutely overwhelmed and stressed and unhappy because of the choices they're making. And of course, the emotion is always involved in that too. But so, as you mentioned before, you know, each person is an individual. Each case is an individual. I'd say emotion is tremendously important. But in terms of quantum levels of influence, the very highest level is the soul. It has the most power. When we uninhibit ourselves, it flows and it is such influence for our health. But then the mind is the next quantum level lower than the soul. And then the emotion is a quantum level lower than the mind's influence. And then the body, you know, working at disease at the level of the body is really like, you know, using the waterfall metaphor is like, you know, you're trying to bail out a boat that's sinking with a bucket, but to just patch the boat would be a lot smarter. And that's where, that's the mental place, you know, that's the mental realm. The motion is the bridge between the body and the mind. So sometimes we can be aware that we have an issue, a mental belief system that's inhibiting our I am, and the body's sick, but we are aware and we try to change, but unless the emotion flows, then the chi doesn't flow and move the stuck energies of the body. So the emotion sometimes has to move in order to bring about healing.
You know, it's interesting because I think we have a tendency to try to separate those two. The mind is one thing and the body is something else, but your philosophy is saying that they're all interconnected, and if anything is off in the continuum, then it needs to be addressed. I wanted to ask you a question about fibromyalgia.
Yes.
It's something that a lot of my audience is women, but I have a lot of men too, but fibromyalgia in particular is something that a lot of women suffer from. And my first question about that is, how is fibromyalgia related to emotions? I've heard that the stress causes the symptoms to get even more pronounced. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, one of the main things that people struggle from, I guess I can refer to women in this case, is you know, not dealing with the problem, but finding some way to run from it, whether it's eating or watching TV or just trying to ignore it, push it down. Mm-hmm. When we have pain, emotional pain, whether it's feeling lonely or abandoned, or you know, you're hurting for someone or you're hurting for yourself, if you don't let yourself feel with that, and not just feel it, but also deal with it, like clear it. Like, there's a reason why I'm feeling sad. Well, what is it? Okay, it's because I have an unhealthy relationship. Okay, well, deal with it. But if you're not even dealing with it and you're not letting yourself feel, then the pain that is felt embeds itself into the body, and the body reflects that painful emotion that's not being dealt with. And so you'll get the aches and you'll get the chronic pain and you'll get the fatigue that comes with it. So that's it's amazing, Linus. I'm amazed at how little investigation practitioners, especially, of course, conventional medical doctors, but even naturopathic doctors, you know, healers, how very little investigation there is for a person with fibromyalgia about what their problem is.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because everyone who I know, I have a very good friend who is an advocate for fibromyalgia patients. In fact, she has an association now that she runs that helps advocate for fibromyalgia patients. And just from talking to her, I understand that it's the roots of fibromyalgia have its foundation in feelings and emotions and things that are not necessarily initially a physical issue. But yet and still, she says that a lot of the doctors go straight for the symptoms and treating that and not digging deeper in terms of what's causing the symptoms. But once again, traditional medicine, as you know, goes for treating symptoms and not causation. Then you take that a step further and you talk with the naturopaths and, you know, other doctors who are in the healing modalities. You're right. Sometimes they can fall into that same trap of not digging deeper to find out what truly, really, really is at the root cause of why their patient is having some of the physical symptoms that they're having. And I chose fibromyalgia fibromyalgia, because there has been a direct correlation that's been tied between fibromyalgia and emotions and feelings
and
stress.
Emotion.
Yes, but yeah. there's other things though too. Let's talk about cancer, for instance. I'm sure you're familiar with that. But share with us some of the things that have been said about cancer and people's emotions.
I will. But just before I do that, I just want to address something about naturopaths, about nutritionists, about. You know, this whole world, we're kind of stuck in the mechanistic model. We're stuck in a physicality model. We're stuck in the materialism of the world. So we don't recognize the importance and the impact of holism. So this is what my book, Holistic Counseling, really emphasizes, is the oneness, is the mind-body connection and the emotion. So that the body is just a faithful puppy dog that is demonstrating what's going on underneath at the deeper levels. And so when we just address it at the physical level, what happens is the body's expressing something. Symptoms and pain and disease on the body are an expression of an underlying problem on the mental emotional field. So what happens when you take away the expression of something?
What happens when you take away the expression of something?
Yeah.
When you take away the expression of something, I guess it begins to lose its flavor, its identity.
It loses its identity, but let's say a child is crying, mm-hmm. and you say, you know, stop crying. Mm-hmm. The child will get more upset, and it will have to find a way.
Right.
It has to find another way to express the underlying problem,
right.
And it's always worse. Mm-hmm. So when we take away the initial symptoms, what the body then has to do is find a more severe way to get the message across. It's like, oh, okay, you didn't hear me crying. Well, now I'm going to take a sledgehammer and I'm going to slam a hole in the gyp rock.
Right.
Okay, and you're going to say, okay, we're going to take the sledgehammer away now and, you know, we're going to patch up the gyp rock and admonish the child. And they say, okay, now I'm going to kick you in your shins, mm-hmm. right? So it always gets worse. And it's the same with disease, is that the conventional model of chronic illness, not necessarily acute illness, because sometimes we need to save a life, and so it's important to address things a little bit more at the level of the body and more aggressively when it's severe. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about chronic illness, and fibromyalgia is a chronic illness, cancer is chronic, mm-hmm. autoimmune disease is chronic, then if we're just addressing at the physical level, we are doing a great disservice to our patient. First of all, we're making matters worse. And second of all, we're denying them from learning about themselves as a soul incarnate on earth, about why they're manifesting this disease through a false relationship with self. And that's the implications for healing that the holistic model provides and the allopathic model does not. Is that you come here, you live, you die, what do you take with you? Do you take the car that you bought or even the university degree that you got? Or the money in the bank? No. The only thing that we take is what we learn through the tough lessons in life that we grow from. And what greater lesson than through illness?
That's true.
Through suffering.
Well, what can one do to advocate for themselves when it comes to, let's say, most of our listeners have made to start with traditional docs. What can they do to advocate to get the doctor to dig deeper past just the symptoms that they have and to help them discover the true causations?
Absolutely. Well, this is a question after my own heart, Linus, because I think patients, people have to request that the institutions teach the doctors how to do this. I'm one of the only practitioners in naturopathy who is teaching, as a naturopathic doctor, who is teaching how to access the mind-body medicine, a mind-body connection. Now, there are medicines that are holistic, like homeopathy, and like, you know, that's one of the greatest ones. And like this kind of counseling, there are medicines that help people access healing beyond the use of allopathic medicine. But to get to the choice, the most powerful modality is holistic. counseling. And this is what I'm here to teach. And I'm willing to teach at universities, at colleges, and to help people set up the program so that their practitioners learn how to do it. The book is a big gateway. It's a big starting point. And then the course is also very important, and the certification. So first of all, this is how things change, is that people voice their opinion, you know?
Yes, yes. And so many times I think that sometimes people go to their traditional doctor and they just kind of lie down there and say, okay, you know, just tell me what's wrong. And actually, we need to take an active participation in our treatment. We need to ask questions. We need to not just necessarily take what they say for rote and do our own research and find out what else is out there. Because you said something that was really important. It's a very important word that I think that we as human beings need to remind ourselves of. We have a choice. We have a choice to decide how we're going to live our lives, how we're going to heal from our diseases, how we're going to get better, how we're going to approach wellness. We have a choice. There's nothing written in stone that says that you have to do it a particular way. It's your life, it's your body, and it's your choice to explore other modalities that are going to really help you to be totally well. I think that we have a lot of folks roaming around in our society who really aren't well. They might be physically well, but there's other things going on. I mean, physically, I don't think I have that many issues, but I have those other issues going on. But if you were to look at me, you would never know that. So we could all begin to ask those questions and dig deep and to begin to make choices when it comes to really approaching wellness for our life. And I understand, Doctor, first of all, I want to make sure that people know where they can get your book and also where they can find more out about your counseling and also the courses that you teach.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much. So first of all, if you go to Holistic, that's HOLISTIC-counseling.ca, you'll see right there that this illustrates all about the course and when up and coming classes are. You could also contact me if you want to book an engagement where I'll come, and it requires a certain minimum number of people and stuff like that. So that's what we can arrange together. And also there's a tab on the top where it says the book. And there you have the links where you could buy the book on Amazon.com, Amazon.uk if you're a European listener, or anywhere else in the world, and also like Canada. And so that's really good. And also, I also want to emphasize one thing before, is that, you know, if you go to the supermarket and you tell the person, you know, I want lychees, they go, what? What are you talking about? Right. You know, they're like, right, sure. And then another person comes and they say, you know, I'd like some of those delicious lychees. I've heard such good things about them. And then the person's like, right, okay, fine. But then when 20 people come and they want lychees, the person's like, I got to get me some lychees.
Right.
I got to put lychees on the shelves for people. So when people, when the collective changes, when people are demanding their doctors, then for holism, for getting to the root, for helping them learn and then helping them be empowered to make change of their underlying beliefs, then that's going to change the policy at the education level. And, for instance, open the doors for someone like myself from my book to get into the establishments to teach and to change the way that we view health and holism and healing. So that's a really good, I'm so pleased you brought that up, because that's hugely important.
Yes, it is. And again, you know, I believe in people being advocates for themselves and asking the questions and bringing up these topics, because he's absolutely right. If enough people do it, that's how change happens. I mean, right now in this country, in the United States, we're going through a major change because people decide to speak up in terms of not feeling comfortable with what was going on with the status quo. And whether you agree with it or not, as a result of people speaking up, we are going through a change. And you can facilitate that same kind of change in your everyday life. Thank you so much, Doctor, for being on What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy. It's been so fun talking to you, and I've learned so much.
It's really such a pleasure, and I really thank you, too. I just want to mention one other quick website, and it's where you could get other writings that I've done and other teachings.
Absolutely.
For instance, I have a little course on mind-body medicine and things like that. It's Dr. Moshe, MOSHE.com. So that's another place that you could get my stuff.
Okay, and we're going to put those links there on the show page. And also, there's all kinds of neat information about Dr. Moshe in his bio, but we also have his social media that you can also check in with him. It's important for you to do the research, find out more about this, because this is something that can truly change your life. For change the overall quality of your life for the better by taking a look at finding out more of what it means to have a mind-body medicine approach to your overall health. Thanks again, Dr. Moshe, for being with us.
You're welcome, and thank you too, Linus.
And thank you to all of you listeners for tuning in. It's been wonderful having you. You know, I love the idea of being able to give you alternative ways of thinking, alternative ways of being, alternative ways of connecting with who you truly are and who it was that you were meant to be, which is, of course, unique and fantastic and definitely someone who's contributing good to our planet. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you.